From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by DataPipe Managed IT Services, delivering a comprehensive suite of managed services, including implementing, securing, and scaling applications designed for mid-market and Fortune 1000 enterprises. DataPipe.com.
According to recent research, procrastination tends to make people poorer, fatter, and unhappier over time. It can affect everything from your career to your love life. On today's Please Explain, two psychologists will answer your questions on why we put things off, even when we know it's bad for us. Pierre Steele, associate professor at the University of Calgary, recently completed a 10-year research project on procrastination, and he joins us by phone. Also by phone, Dr. William Nawes, the author of several books on procrastination, including the Procrastination Workbook and Do It Now. We'll be taking your calls a little later. If you have a question or want to share some insights on why you procrastinate and how it's affected you, give us a call at 212-433-9692. Let's begin with you, Piers. Is there a standard definition of procrastination?
Well, I try to introduce a standard definition. I mean, it's not just simple delay. I mean, if you're kind of, let's say, doctor waiting for a patient's life signs to stabilize, no one's going to call that procrastinating.
But what about dawdling and lollygagging? Are they the same as
procrastinating? Well, those are synonyms. Those aren't definitions. Usually it's to put off till later, and the shortest definition, to put off till later what you think you should be doing now. So that's really the key part. You believe that you ought to be doing it now.
And what are the most common things that people put off?
Well, anything they usually dislike. I mean, if you find aversive, and especially if it's boring, that's what you put off. And if they have this type of quality. The hard part you experience now, the rewards you experience far later. So that short-term pain, long-term gain, well, that might be what we should be doing, but it's not what we are.
So does hitting the snooze button on your alarm in the morning count as procrastinating?
Oh, yeah. Well, if you set that before, right? Why did you set it? Did you plan to use that snooze button? No, you intended to get up at that time, yet you had what we call preference reversal when that time came around, which is very typical for procrastinators, and to decide to sleep in. Procrastinators plan to do the work. They just don't work their plan.
Bill, are there varying degrees of procrastination?
Yes, it runs on a continuum or a scale from mild and not too badly interfering with your life and your work to almost to the point where it can be incapacitating and a pervasive pattern that enters your life in such a way it affects your life decisions. You may end up settling for a lesser love life. You delay steps to boost and sustain good. And I think, as Pierce mentioned, the cost of procrastination in some instances at the higher end of the continuum can be pretty profound. But people can procrastinate in various zones of their lives. They can be efficiency dynamos in many ways. But when it comes to, for example, standing up to a neighbor, they may have anxiety about a confrontation, and they'll put that off about as long as they can. They may find certain things especially unappealing or unattractive or boring or bothersome or uncomfortable, you know, such as getting their taxes prepared. Or they could, as many of the people I've seen report, you know, they may have difficulty getting organized and meeting deadlines. They keep putting that off, overcoming their public speaking anxiety, losing weight and sustaining weight loss. That's a big one. Getting into better physical health, dealing with negative thinking, finishing a dissertation, which Pierce may have a lot to say about regarding students that are involved in that process, you know, getting to meetings, social events on time. So these specific zones in life can be particularly troublesome for some people and not for others. So it's the process by which people go about their procrastinating, I think, which is really very fascinating. And I think that's going to be an area that will be a point of focus for the future.
Well,
how do you do it?
You did suggest that everyone procrastinates one way or another, so it may just be a part of human nature. What about animals? Do any animals procrastinate?
Well, you know, if you get a depressed cat, it might be less inclined to chase a mouse that's a little bit out of reach. But it isn't really thinking about it. It lives from moment to moment and based on its own instincts. There may be some primates that procrastinate, animals that think at least have the capability of projecting. But I think it's our unique ability to project and to anticipate and to expect certain things in the future, which we find distasteful, that almost serves as a trigger that causes us to recoil in an oftentimes entirely opposite direction.
Well, Mazur did some work on it like in the late 1990s with pigeons, but, you know, you're kind of inferring procrastination because you can't ask them.
Well, can we call chronic procrastination a disorder, Piers?
Yeah, oh, for sure. I mean, I would put it, I take a slight, Dr. Noss and I, we agree on most things probably in procrastination, and probably about, you know, 80-90%, but I view it more of an impulse-related disorder. And it's just kind of an instance of other forms of addictive-like behavior.
So it has or it doesn't have a physical or chemical root in the brain?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, any kind of something that impairs the executive function, your frontal lobe, that's going to cause procrastination. Like people with ADHD, they procrastinate. Also, there's other things that kind of deal with it. For example, and actually one of the predictors or one of these symptoms of depression is procrastination.
You're a Canadian. Do Canadians procrastinate as much as people in this country do?
I actually looked at that. It was one of the two countries I could actually had enough research to compare, and almost completely the same. No differences anywhere.
My guests are Piers Steele, associate professor at the University of Calgary, and Dr. William Naws. I'm sorry. Author of several books on procrastination, and we're talking about procrastination on Please Explain today here on WNYC and WNYC.org. Bill Naws, you've described procrastination as starting with an anticipation and ending with a delay. So what goes on in our minds when we're procrastinating?
Okay. Well, that's one of the, I think, very, very fascinating areas, because if people who put things off or procrastinate and genuinely have decided that they would like to do something to alter that pattern, if they begin to monitor themselves and take a look and see the steps that they go through, and it can be extremely complicated and sometimes extend over hours or as well as over minutes, it's what goes on between the perception and the delay is interesting. And there, I think, Pearson and I do agree. He uses the word impulse. What I do is I describe at least one phase of procrastination as a automatic habit process, and it's almost like it kicks into gear. But if you slow the process, you take a look, you log what you're thinking, log what you're doing, and you try to map it, what you might do is find something like the following. You have something before you, such as, let's say, a term paper or report, or you're going to be doing a performance review and of a dozen or so of your subordinates, and you really don't want to do it because whatever reasons you may have. But you view it as uncomfortable, so you have the timely activity. So you view it as boring, unpleasant, uncomfortable, threatening, confusing, or whatever it may be. And then typically there's a process whereby you sort of magnify the onus of the task as you filter out the real incentives for acting now. And you probably experience some kind of an emotional or visceral reaction. You know, some people describe it sort of as tightness in their shoulders and their stomach. But whatever it is, it's sufficient to kind of kick off a shift in focus to something else, such as daydreaming, reading, watching television. And you tell yourself at the same time, often but not always, that you'll get to it tomorrow, perhaps. Then when tomorrow comes, you make up another excuse. And there's a good reason for that. Tomorrow isn't such a good day because you have more things to do tomorrow. And then when under sufficient pressure, you either finish or quit. In other words, you're going to fail the course, and so you really only have 4 hours to go, and you can no longer put it off. You kick it into gear. And most people do this. They swear to themselves that they'll do better next time, and then in a related circumstance, they repeat the same automatic procrastination habit process. And it's almost like people sort of seamlessly slide into this beneath the their radar, and procrastination is sort of like stealth. In fact, a business executive I worked with quite a few years ago, was threatened with being terminated because he failed to get his performance reviews completed. And they would be done months and months and months behind schedule, and he would struggle with them. And I gave him a very simple assignment, which is to read a page on procrastination, which sort of outlined what it is and what you could do about it. And he told himself first that he would read it on a plane going over to Hawaii. And then once he was over in Hawaii and he hadn't read it, he said, I'll read it in the hotel. Then I'll read it coming back. And then he set his clock to 6 o'clock in the morning because he knew he was going to see me. And he wanted to get in early and read it before that. And then as he passed the computer, he saw a computer game, and he spent time on that. He was wondering whether he had enough gas in the car, so he went out to check his gas gauge. Then he decided he had a shower and eat. I mean, there's a whole long list of things. And we compiled a list of what he did and the amount of time it took, and it took him practically 40 hours of these delaying tactics to avoid what amounted to something like 2 minutes worth of work, partly because he was afraid that he wouldn't be reading it correctly enough and that I might then criticize him because he didn't have it pinned down as well as he might, which actually was the reason in which he had delayed and postponed his work on his performance reviews.
Well, this sounds almost like procrastination is a form of self-torture, kind of related to low self-esteem.
Well, not necessarily. It can be. And procrastination is complex, and it can come about for a variety of reasons, one of which you doubt yourself, and so you put things off until you have some assurance of success or whatever it may be. But people, I don't think, wake up at midnight and then, along with Edgar Allan Poe, Raven, start saying that I will never more be efficient again, and I intend to torture myself, make myself my life miserable, add to my stress, possibly compromise my immune system through chronic procrastination efforts, and then finish off my days with a long list of regrets of things that I didn't do that I think I could have done while wasting time thinking about other things that probably have little merit or meaning in my life. So I don't think it's self-torture. I don't think people like to do that. I'm sure we can find exceptions, but I think people just slide into it, and they don't recognize the power of this habit. The impulse, as Pierce said, begins with the awareness and the distractions that one goes into, and you get rewarded for that. You get a sense of initial relief, and that relief then tends to help reinforce and reward the pattern. Plus, every time you make a decision to delay, you feel good about it, because tomorrow, in fact, is like Charlotte O'Hare said in Gone with the Wind, is another day. But it isn't necessarily a better day, and that's the problem.
Go ahead. Yeah, the research kind of backs up the self-efficacy or self-confidence part. But certainly you can be a procrastinator without that. There's the biggest thing is that people tend to overvalue today far, far more than tomorrow.
What is discounted expectancy theory?
Well, that's it. It's essentially about impulsiveness, that that we naturally, almost as a human species, tend to value this moment irrationally more, and that's the key thing, irrationally more than the next. So a pleasure today, it can be worth to some people 10 times the pleasure tomorrow. In fact, you can do this, like, for example, about giving people, let's say, a hypothetical $1,000. You said, okay, how much would you be willing to give back that $1,000 for a check, but post-dated 1 year, certified, no risk? How much larger does it have to be? And you get results, I mean, even less people are kind of like, overlay a rational response to it, about $5,000 to $10,000. You know, people are willing to get small rewards, and the more instantaneous it is, the more we're going to value it. So if you kind of have an environment where you surround yourself with these kind of teeny but really available rewards, those are temptations, and you're going to take advantage of them much to the neglect of longer-term projects.
Well, it must be easier to procrastinate today with all these distractions available, TV, computers, video games, cell phones. People play with their BlackBerries until the very last minute when a movie is coming on.
Yeah, and, you know, BlackBerry, CrackBerry, I think, was the word of the year in 2006 for the new college dictionary. But some people say we're kind of living in a motivational, toxic environment. I mean, no one's saying that these things like email and internet are not good things, but cars were good things, and eventually we put seatbelts in them.
So when we say that the negative consequences of procrastinating include affecting your health, your relationships, your finances, and your careers, are we just talking about something that's quite obvious, or is there something deeper going on there?
I think, well, it's inevitable, really. I mean, it's like you're always gambling. You're gambling against the house when you procrastinate. If you believe I should be doing this now, yet I choose to do it later, you yourself believe that you're going to be worse off for it. Now, after you make that choice, you might try and kind of say, well, and you'll do Dr. Noss's stuff is really good about this, about self-justifying and saying, okay, well, I've made this choice, and now I'm going to try and feel good about it, even though I think it's wrong. And you get a lot of this kind of irrational and kind of destructive mind talk. But it's that initial decision to kind of put things off. It's basically part of human nature, and we all have it to some degree. Some people have it very strongly, other people less so, and so they don't see much procrastination.
We have to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll be taking your calls to Pierre Steele and William Noss on today's Please Explain. Our number here is 212-433-9692. Don't put it off. Start calling right now. And we are back with Bill Noss and Pierre Steele talking about procrastination on Please Explain and taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Jerry from New Jersey, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I wondered about how important clutter is and the ability to organize. I'm trying to write a dissertation, and I have bipolar, and it's very hard for me to organize. And I have sort of gotten a dispensation, whatever, from the ADA, the Americans with Disability Act. This wouldn't have happened 10 years ago, but they do recognize that I have kind of an ailment that keeps me from organizing and moving ahead. It's not even procrastination. It's just I can't organize things, and the more I look at it, the crazier it makes me.
Well, one of the problems of having a disability, which is a problem, is that you're going to be operating at a disadvantage. On the other hand, with clutter and getting things organized with a bipolar disorder, typically the research shows and my own practice shows that if you create a structure and a routine which is very predictable, that you have a higher degree of controllability. You're less likely to see things as chaotic and out of control, and that'll tend to ease tension, which will reduce the risk of the depression that sometimes goes along with the bipolar. But the depression, in and of itself, is likely to be a handicapping factor because you're more likely to put off under those circumstances and less likely to attend to the activities of daily living. On the other hand, the good news is that by changing whatever kind of depressive thinking you might have and procrastination thinking, the odds are that you can build up capabilities to stay more on target and on focus. But it does take time, and it does take practice, and it does take a sustained effort, and you almost have to plan for this for the rest of your life.
We thank you for your call. Heidi from New Jersey, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard, nice to talk to you. I actually have been struggling with procrastination and depression for many years, and when I was in high school, I believe it was Dr. Null's book, Do It Now, I convinced my English teacher to let me do a book report on that type of book, which she normally wouldn't allow, and she said yes, and then I put it off and didn't do it. So I just wanted to ask, after struggling with this for so long, I've made a lot of false starts, and how you might suggest that I deal with that, because whenever I start organizing or develop a system of some sort, I always have in the back of my mind, oh, I'm just going to fail again.
So the question is it possible to break yourself of the habit of procrastinating?
Yeah, without being too discouraged. I mean, is there something that I can hold on to?
And are there little steps that people can take?
Yeah, I would say, well, first thing, it's much easier to beat down than to beat. Like, don't start thinking dichotomously, win or lose. I mean, reducing it is a worthy goal. And so reducing by 50%, procrastinating half as much. You usually procrastinate a week, then all of a sudden you're only procrastinating 3 days. That's a victory. And breaking it down to small pieces usually works. This is something that every book, everyone agrees upon goal setting. There's going to be no kind of real dispute about that. And from this, my perspective, it's essentially we can get excited about things we can scratch off our list quickly. And you want to start off routine, a small routine. something that you can build upon. So you want to get almost like a little area of control, small goals, and then kind of constantly build upon that. And this is a bit like physiotherapy. You're not going to walk in a day. You want to kind of build it up stronger and stronger. And consequently, if you kind of try and shoot for too big a goals at the start, you're probably going to overtax basically your motivational capacity for that moment, and then
now,
you're going to experience failure.
You use the word procrast as a verb. Is that a real word? If you procrast, people saying that in the biz?
Well, you have to have grammarian. I've just been using this in so many different ways.
Well, somebody's going to look it up for me. Che from the Bronx, how you're on the air?
Hi, I'm from Brooklyn.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No problem. You know something, when I'm listening to you guys, I'm cracking up because you're just describing me. And this is the first time I've been compelled to call in because I procrastinate all the time. And I just wondered if it's how much of it is like psychological or how much of it is behavioral, or, you know, I procrastinate when it's going to work. I should be getting ready for work right now, but no, I'm not doing it. And
well, this is a lot more fun.
Calling family, I procrastinate, and then I dread because I haven't called them, and then I dread it even more, so I don't call them. It's just my whole world is just filled with procrastination.
Well, welcome to the club, the human race, because there's quite a few people who are in the same boat that you're in. And it is an automatic habit, and it tends to spread and grow. The more you practice, it's like anything else, you get better at it. And the question is, how important is it for you to change the process? And that, I think, becomes a judgment that you make, because I think most people would like to make changes. In fact, you'd probably like to get to places on time, not feel stressed, not feel harried and hurried and so on and so forth, like most people would. But if you're like most people, you may want that, but you may also want something else that's even more. And that is to be able to accomplish all these things without having the hassle, the stresses, slipping back, the learning process, and so on and so forth. So to break a procrastination habit that tends to be more pervasive, which is annoying you and bothering you and stressing you, is a matter of progressive mastery, as Pierce mentioned. You sort of take steps which you can accomplish and keep your mind focused on the goal and then grind it out. But the other part to it is you have your focus on the goal, which you'd like to accomplish. You know that it's not going to be mastered in a day. And what you do is you pick one single area to start with, because if you pick a single area, such as getting places on time, which, by the way, I call lateness procrastination, and it's a challenge. It's not a very simple thing to overcome. But if you accept that a certain amount of discomfort is going to be part of this process, you build that into your plan, and you concentrate on that one area till you get to the point where you meet your objectives. Then turn what you've learned into the next area of procrastination, repeat that, and keep doing so. And fortunately, the procrastination workbook has a nicely mapped out program which you can take and follow and repeat as many times as you want.
Okay, Jay?
Thank you. Just quickly, do you deal with the issue of like dread or anxiety?
Dread and anxiety, yes. That if people will put off dealing with their anxieties and their dreads, that's another form of procrastination, and that involves two things. One is forcing yourself to face up to the problem, and then two, forcing yourself to expose yourself to the sort of things that you tend to be dreadful of and frightened of, providing those things are actually fictional fears. And for example, if you said, look, I'm dreadful of a polar bear, and I live in the North Pole area, and I see polar bears, and I really like to overcome the fear, that's not a good area to expose yourself by approaching the bear. But in most other instances, you approach that which you fear, and exposure types of activities tend to be the most effective ways of overcoming anxiety, coupled with cognitive restructuring, which is monitoring your thinking, connecting with what you're telling yourself, such as, my God, I won't be able to do this, this is too much, I'll be overwhelmed. And you map that out, and then you start asking questions, such as, why do I think I won't be able to do this? How do I stop myself? And what is overwhelmed? And how is this so overwhelming? And what alternative ways can I see that I might be able to proceed? So you actually start thinking about your thinking, and then you begin to challenge some of these negative thoughts. And over a period of time, progressively, you can master what you set out to accomplish. But it's going to take time, and it's going to take effort. There is no quick fix. There is no magic pills, no magic cures that I'm aware of. And if you find one, let me know.
We are talking about procrastination on today's Please Explain with two psychologists, Bill Nawes and Pierre Steele, and taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Terry from Westchester, hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I'm interested, I guess, in what you call the self-justification part of procrastination. I'm wondering if there are any, if there is a positive side, particularly in the form of shorter-term creative effort, something like writing papers at school. Is there anything, too, if you leave it at the last moment, you're more jazzed up, you have adrenaline racing, is there anything neurologically that might explain a better creative effort?
Some people say that they work better under pressure.
Well, that's not really procrastination, that's prioritization. And that does, yeah, if you actually look at how hard people work just at the 11th hour, we had an entire classroom wired up so we could see exactly when each student was doing each piece of work. It was all done on a computer with a time date stamp. And during the final day, some students were doing about 11 or 12 times the average rate. They were working like a platoon, one person. So, yeah, you see that. But you see that with pretty much with everybody. And if you really honestly believe that this is like, for example, that it is best for you to leave this to the last moment, that makes sense. But a lot of people say that when they usually have already made the decision to procrastinate, and now they're trying to justify it after the fact. Consequently, from the observer, sometimes it's actually kind of difficult for us to say whether any particular act is procrastination. What is better to able to tell if it's a pattern. So you see this person doing it again and again, and there's problems arising.
When I was a student, I tended to procrastinate, and then I left school, got a job, or two, or three, or four, and when I went back to school, I realized that if I didn't put things off to the last minute, if I started an assignment as soon as it was given to me, maybe not doing it all immediately, but doing it slowly, that I actually could get all the work done. And I went from being a C student to a B minus student. So I guess there was an improvement. One of our listeners wrote in to say that if he's interested in a topic or book, he'll enjoy reading it. But if the same book were assigned reading, it would be an uphill battle to read it, and he'd even start to despise the book. Is that a form of procrastination, or is rebellion?
It can be. The latest information, at least the latest things I've thought about, is a concept called reactance. And reactance is a fancy word that just simply means this. Let's suppose that you're trying to lose weight and you really enjoy chocolate brownies. And if you want to lose weight, you know that you're going to have to cut things out from your diet, such as the chocolate brownies. You may feel a certain amount of resentment about that because you're deprived of a certain degree of freedom, and the freedom would relate to the choice to eat the brownies. But you can't have it both ways. You can't both lose the weight and maintain the same habit. So that's reactance, and the same thing with people who drink too much. When it becomes clear that they're going to have to quit because they're tired of losing their licenses, their jobs, their mates, and so on and so forth, they may resent having to leave the bar with their associates and so on and so forth. So that's a form of reactance. Or the Second Amendment, let's suppose somebody said we're going to take and confiscate all guns, even if you don't like them, like the amendment, taking away the option or choice. Now, that's how it works with assigned tasks. Making a choice to read as you will, when you will, is sort of an easy thing to do. On the other hand, you live in a society where there are deadlines, there are certain social obligations. All these things tend to be somewhat necessary to some measure in order for the society to work well. So now you're told, here's something that you must do. And some people think that this deprives them of a choice. And in those instances, they might resent it and delay, procrastinate. But on the other hand, they shoot themselves in the foot, because if this is something that they're going to have to do sooner or later, why not do it sooner rather than later, get it off your back, and stop the nonsense about saying what a horrible thing it is and I shouldn't have to be involved in something I don't want to do. I should only be able to do the things that I want to do, and that's pie-in-the-sky thinking. So if that's basically the intent of the question, that's my answer.
Well, let's back that up a bit. I get the feeling that busier people tend to tend to procrastinate more, but because they procrastinate, they make themselves even busier. Is that what you've been saying to some degree?
busy people procrastinate more? I don't think so.
Oh, that's not true.
No, I think busy people tend to, well, it depends. If you're involved in busy work, you might be ducking practically everything that's of significance in your life. On the other hand, if you're fairly busy, focused, and efficient, then you probably don't have time to delay, postpone, put too many things off in life. And then when the weekends come, or there's certain times, and you might just veg out, sit down, watch TV just to relax and so on. So if you're busy, or you're focused, and you're accomplishing a lot, you're probably not going to be spending a lot of time procrastinating, because that does consume quite a bit of time, as the case of the executive that I described.
Cliff from Manhattan, you're on the air.
Yeah, I was calling because I'm a full-time musician. I work mostly in the improvised creative music scene, for lack of a better term.
Jazz.
One of the things I've realized over time is that using procrastination as a technique to open up creativity and break the critical mindset of a lot of work. Case in point, I have a recording date coming up, and if I know I have that recording date, then I work and I don't allow myself to really question the product that I'm about to work on, and I accept it for what it is. And it usually ends up being a lot better than when I don't have a series of concerts or a recording date, and I'm just writing as a practice of writing, and then I just get critical and nothing's ever good enough. So having, like, waiting for those times has really become like a really good way of opening up a lot of avenues.
Well, I'm going to say something, then Pierce could probably respond. I think that's baloney, because what you're procrastinating on is dealing with the self-criticalness. And as long as you continue to be self-critical, then you can use as an excuse the importance of procrastinating in order to safeguard your creativity. So you double-guess yourself, you judge what you do, and under those circumstances, you probably divert yourself away from facing one very important fact, which is, if you tend to be that self-critical, how come? What are you telling yourself? What is there about what you're telling yourself that wouldn't likely hold up in a court of law if you were to present it before a jury? So I think it's time to do some self-monitoring, take a hard look at that point of view. And my guess is that if you do that and you overcome the self-criticalness, you'll probably be considerably more productive, have a lot less stress, because self-criticism is a stressful way of living. And then you won't have to use, which I think is a very unique excuse for procrastinating, by the way. I haven't heard that one before, and I've seen thousands of people, and I thought I'd heard everything, but you've really made my day, because you gave me something new, which is procrastination is a means by which I can become more creative. Well, I think you're barking up the wrong tree. I think focusing on getting rid of the self-criticism will probably open up avenues the likes of which you've never seen before.
Thank you for calling us, Cliff, and thank you for giving us another view of procrastination. Well, some pretty famous people were procrastinators. Leonardo da Vinci, as famous as any, and many people feel it was a real tragedy. We lost some great work that he might have done. Who are some of the other great procrastinators?
Goethe. It took him 25 years to do Faust.
Yeah, St. Augustine. He very rare for a saint. Not many saints have this particular quality of being a sex addict, but St. Augustine was. But what made him a saint was that he actually was torn up by the fact of all the sex he was having. And he used to say, his famous quote is, "Dear Lord, make me chaste, just not today."
Pierre Steele is associate professor at the University of Calgary, and William Nause is the author of several books on procrastination, including the Procrastination Workbook and also Do It Now. And I think we can recommend those to people who procrastinate or who are frustrated by trying to get other people to stop procrastinating. Thank you both so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you very much. It was very enjoyable.
My pleasure.
On Monday's show, a former investigative producer for 60 Minutes exposes the ways in which Western influence helped devastate Iraq during the years of Saddam Hussein's rule. Plus, Martin Amis on his controversial new novel. Also, a look at the Metropolitan Museum's exhibit on the dark portraits created in Germany in the 1920s. And a man who entered the U.S. illegally from Mexico nearly 20 years ago talks about how the reality of his life here has measured up against his hopes. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Sarah English, Brenna Farrell, and Blake Neshek. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. And we had help today from Jennifer Keeney-Sendro. Debbie Daughtry is at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.